You're listening to KDWA AM 1460 and FM 97.7, and this is Community In-Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rood, and I have in studio with me State Representative for District 54B, Tony Juergens. Representative Juergens, it's great to have you back after a week off.
I was just going to say, it feels good to be back, and we missed a week because of the interim Easter break that we had at the legislature.
And just because you had an Easter break as we were doing show prep, you were telling me that doesn't mean you had a week off. You were still out there gathering information and learning about different things that come up in legislature. And you tell me that you had an interesting tour out in Sleepy Eye.
I did. And that's something that I learned my very first year in the legislature. I didn't even realize that we had a week off, so I didn't schedule anything.
Right.
And so since then, I've learned that to take advantage of that week where we don't have hearings or floor sessions up at the Capitol, and to really use that week to get out into the district. And most years, that's when I go to schools and read to kids and get tours of businesses and stuff like that. And it's a little bit different this year. I didn't do those types of things like I normally would because of the COVID restrictions.
Sure.
But yes, I did. I was invited out to Sleepy Eye. The Minnesota pork producers were there along with, we met at Christensen Farms just outside of Sleepy Eye, between Sleepy Eye and New Ulm, to really learn about their process. And it was really interesting. You know, you go to the grocery store and you buy a pack of ribs or pork shoulder or sure. bacon, and and you realize that that's coming from somewhere. But to hear the lengths that they go through from just the production side of the genetics involved with the pigs, and how they control that, and how they control the diets and the medical the attention that these animals get. They have hundreds of farms that they contract with. So, and there's other pork producers that are doing something similar, but this is at Christensen Farms, and they actually contract with local farmers and farmers all over the region, really, to raise the pigs for them. And so they own the pigs. If you're a contract farmer, you know, it's your building, it's your farm. You do the feeding and caring of the animals. But Christensen Farm, they provide the food, they provide the medical care to the animals if they're needed. And they rotate them through at about 6 months. They go to market.
Wow.
And so most of these farmers that they contract with, they'll, you know, once they do the cleaning and upkeep after the animals leave, then they'll get another round of probably 2,500 to 3,000 piglets come in, and they go through the same process again. So it's really interesting. And a lot of what we heard, and we were in a large room, and we're all social distanced, and we, you know, wore our masks, and the interesting thing is they were doing a lot of that long before COVID even hit.
Sure.
Just to make sure that somebody that's visiting, and we didn't go to see any of the actual production farms. We were in their
office
building.
We just stayed at Christensen. Yeah.
But if you go to one of their production facilities, they have all kinds of precautions in place because, you know, somebody coming in, you know, if they bring any kind of a disease in, you're talking millions of dollars worth potential damages there. So they really, when COVID hit, they were ready for it, and a lot of the precautions they were already taking. And so it was a good trip. It was a nice day trip. Like I think I mentioned to you before we started, that's the furthest from home I've been in over a year. I think up to St. Paul was maybe the furthest from home I'd been since then. So or prior to that. So it was nice to get a little bit of a road trip in.
It sounded like a very productive day trip for you. But let's bring it back into the Twin Cities. Let's bring it back to the Capitol building. You sent out a press release on Friday talking about a comprehensive funding bill that is being worked on up at the Capitol now, and there are some issues that you have with that. Go through that for me a little bit.
Yeah, well, I just don't think the comprehensive tax or transportation bill that was heard in the House this past week. It raises taxes. There's a gas tax increase in there. And what a lot of us think is, I mean, there's billions of dollars coming in from the federal government right now that we just don't think that this is a time that we need to be looking at any tax increases. And the right now transportation is funded primarily through the gas tax and through motor vehicle sales tax and tab fees. Mm-hmm. And they had increases all across the board on all of those things. So what you normally pay to go get your tab renewals, there would be an increase in that for most vehicles. The motor vehicle sales tax, you go to buy a car, there's going to be an increase. There would be an increase with their proposal. So these are our working proposals. One of the proposals that they had in, I believe, as we're recording this, there was a hearing today that I think the tax on luxury vehicles was removed, an excise tax on luxury vehicles. Because the way they had it written, it was hard to determine what is a luxury vehicle.
Right,
and so
it
caused too much confusion with defining what that would be. So I believe that's all already been removed. But, you know, I've talked to some auto dealers in the area, and I know that they have many challenges that they're dealing with already. And on their side of it right now, it's a lot of it is getting the right vehicles in. They have people that are ready and willing to purchase a vehicle. But they're having more of an inventory issue. So I think we want to be able to work with the auto dealers and work with that industry and not be adding up, taxes and fees on those that are going to buy new vehicles.
And if these tax increases go through, what is that money being used for then? Where do they want to use it?
Roads and bridges and for transit. And
okay.
Part of the proposal would include an increase in the metro area sales tax. We've tried something similar before. If you recall a few years ago, something called CTIB.
Mm-hmm.
And that raised taxes for, I think it was a half cent. Some communities or some counties might've been a full cent, but half a cent or full cent tax on goods that would go to transportation and transit. But what we found out when that happened is most of the taxes paid in Washington County and Dakota County and the other counties were going to Hennepin and Ramsey County for
sure.
Transit. And so it wasn't very equitable of a distribution. And so that's kind of been tried before, and I don't know that we need to go down that path again. But there are ways to fund transportation. I think that we're doing a pretty good job of that right now between the gas tax that we already have.
Mm-hmm.
Raising the gas tax would put us in the upper tier among states in the country for the gas tax that we have. I think ours right now is at, I think it's 28.5 cents or 28.8 cents or something like that per gallon.
Okay.
The motor vehicle sales tax and the tab fees and the gas tax is how we're funding transportation primarily now for the roads and bridges.
Does the and I'm probably testing your memory a little bit here, but does the amendment to the state constitution come into play with that? I know back in the mid 2010s we had a referendum on the ballot to amend the constitution of the state for that kind of thing, using the motor vehicle excise tax is what it was, to be used only for transportation projects. But they had a floor of 40% on public and no more than 60% on roads and bridges. How does that fit into that? Or does it
Not necessarily on that. I mean, what you're saying is, and I think that has been amended once.
Okay.
But I think where more of the, and I don't remember the exact breakdown, but more of it has gone to transit. And we try to keep that, because, most of the public transportation is in the Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Sure.
And the taxes would be statewide. So, mm-hmm. Greater Minnesota in particular, they want to see it more of it go to roads and bridges because
sure.
That's something that their people are using on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so what we're dealing with now, though, is these tax increases would not really be affected by that whole situation.
Right, right.
Okay. Also, you're working on a transport bill. Bring me up to date on that one a little bit.
The tax bill?
The tax bill?
The tax bill there. That's another one. Well, back up just a second. All of the committees pretty much wrapped up this week.
Sure.
And each of the different areas came out with their specific omnibus bill. I think we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, that mm-hmm. was a process we were leading into. And the tax committee came out with their tax bill. That also includes some tax increases that would, let's see, they would, the one of the things that would be creating another tier, another tax bracket, a fifth tier, which would put us in one of the top tax brackets or in the entire country, sure. at 11.5% for the highest earners in the state. That does have, you know, and we kind of suspected this. We've talked many weeks about the unemployment insurance and the PPP, mm-hmm. The taxes on the proceeds from that. And I think I told you 2 or 3 weeks ago that I suspect what's going to happen is they're going to wrap all of that into one omnibus tax bill that includes some tax increases. And that's what happened. So,
sure.
I'm still getting emails and calls from people asking about the income taxes on unemployment benefits. This omnibus tax bill did include provision not complete up to $10,200, which was good. I think there's an income cap on the higher end of that, so that's close to what we were looking at.
Okay.
And then also about 90% of the people that received, or the businesses that received, the PPP proceeds would not have to pay taxes on that as it stands right now. Minnesota, I've been saying for weeks, we're the only state in the upper Midwest that is currently taxing with state income tax on the PPP proceeds. The federal mm-hmm. government's not, and none of the states in the region. I did have somebody tell me the other day, and I haven't had a chance to verify this, that we're the only state that has not waived the income tax on the PPP proceeds nationally.
Wow.
I haven't been able to confirm that. I do know that there are, if we're not the only one, there are very few.
Sure.
And so that's something that we, you know, that's some people are waiting to file their taxes. I'm still, as people are asking me, can I file my taxes yet or should I wait? And, you know, the state did comply or conform with the federal government with the May 17th deadline for filing your personal income taxes. A lot of businesses have already filed their estimated taxes. And if we can get this bill, this provision passed, then they will have to file amended returns. But as unfortunately was rolled into the same bill that includes some tax increases, it's unfortunate that the people that are waiting to find out when they can file their taxes and how much they're going to have to pay, they're kind of being held up by political games now.
And that seems to be the way it kind of operates. It's kind of the nature of the beast, and you know, what are you going to do?
I've said before, when, you know, both sides play their different games. When my first term, if you recall, the Republicans had control of the House and the Senate, and then Governor Dayton, a Democrat, was the governor. And by this time of session, we had sent all of our budget bills, we passed them off the House floor, passed them in the Senate, and sent them to the governor, knowing that, you know, if we had full control, this is what we would likely do.
Mm-hmm.
And the governor, as we expected at that time, Governor Dayton vetoed those bills. And we were able to then send another bill that we thought he might sign some of these bills. And I don't remember now, it was 4 years ago. I don't remember if he signed any of them. I don't think he did. But we were able to send three rounds of bills to the governor before we got to bills that he would sign and pass the budget. We're just now getting around to the first bills, the omnibus bills that are being put together, and we haven't passed any of them off the House floor yet.
Sure.
So, you know, a little bit different dynamics, mm-hmm. but yet we still have the different party in the, you know, divided legislature, the Democrats in control of the House and Republicans in the Senate, and we still have to come to some sort of an agreement.
Right.
And we have a long way to go before we get there. These bills that we've talked about that have the tax increases in them, the Republicans in the Senate have already said this is, you know, any tax increases anywhere are, it's a non-starter. In a year that we have a over $1 billion budget surplus projected and billions coming in from the federal government, and mm-hmm. we have a tax or the budget reserve, There's no reason to be raising taxes. And yet in the House, most of the bills that we have include tax increases. So there's a lot of difference that we need to work out in the next few weeks.
And the session runs until when?
May 17th, I believe it is.
All right. And do you, well, this is kind of a non-question question, but something will give at some point, and there will be a budget sent to the governor.
There will be an agreement at some point, and mm-hmm. We hope that it's by May 17th. If it's not done there, then we have a potential special session where we come mm-hmm. in. And it seems like every year, that even if it's for a matter of a day or two, there's a special session where maybe we get to an agreement by the mm-hmm. end of session, but it still takes time to actually write the bills. You know, somebody has to physically produce them even once the agreement right. has been made, and then come back in and pass those. So there is time to do it, and things will come together quickly. But at this point in the game, we are quite a ways apart.
The other thing that bears repeating in my mind, too, is that Minnesota has to, by law, produce a balanced budget. You know, it's not like they can just throw something together, get it through, yeah. and then come back and work on it later or
yeah, we're
amend
not like,
it.
Right. We're not like the federal government where we can print money.
Right. Exactly.
And we can't deficit spend. So that's why I say we will come to an agreement at some point. We are constitutionally bound to do that. If we don't get to that point by the end of June, that's when you look at government shutdowns. And mm-hmm. so everybody wants to avoid that. Mm-hmm. So even if we don't by the third week of May, we still have a little bit of time before the biennium ends at the end of June, because we do have government funded until then
right.
from the last biennium.
All right. And we'll keep an eye on how that goes, and I'm sure you'll provide us updates as the information passes through. But at this point, we're about out of time here, so what I'd like to do is, as always, provide you an opportunity to provide your contact information should your constituents have questions or concerns.
Sure. It's email rep.tony.jurgens@house.mn or call 651-296-3135.
And that would get you in touch with my guest for this half hour, Representative Tony Jurgens, State Representative for District 54B in Minnesota. Once again, it's a pleasure having you in studio, sir, and we look forward to having you back.
Great, Mike. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Community In-Depth on KDWA, AM 1460, FM 97.7.